All right, my guest is Robert Grillo. He's an activist, author, and speaker. He is the director of Free From Harm, which he founded in 2009 to expose animal agriculture's impact on non-human animals, vulnerable communities, and the environment. As a marketing communications professional for over 20 years, Grillo has worked on large food industry accounts through which he acquired a behind-the-scenes perspective on food branding and marketing. Farm to Fable is his first book. We spoke about that a couple of years ago when it just came out, and he lives in Chicago. Robert, it's nice to be able to talk to you today.
Great to be with you again, too.
Okay, you've been very busy, so why don't you give me a little update on what Free From Harm has been up to, and then we'll talk about what's really been going on most recently, which is very exciting.
Sure, yeah, I'd love to. So some of the recent projects that I'm working on and people at Free From Harm are working on, one exciting project is something we call, it's a series of profiles of former animal farmers that are now either sanctuary people that have converted, transitioned their farm from to a sanctuary, or they're somehow involved in animal rights, or they're now in the business of selling vegan products. Like, there's a couple that are vegan cheese makers now that used to be.
Yeah, that's exciting. So
we have 18 profiles to start with, and we're going to launch this microsite. It's really kind of within the Free From Harm domain, but it'll be kind of its own place. And we will also be using other domains to attract farmers. And so there's two kinds of audiences for this site. It's first, it's people like you and I that are looking for really transformational stories that we want to share with people, because these are very powerful stories of transformation. But then the other audience that we're hoping to capture is the many farmers that every time we do one of these profiles, one of the questions we ask is, do you know farmers that, like yourself, that you've had conversations with about animal farming? And do they express doubts? Do they express an interest in making a transition like you did? Do you inspire them? And inevitably, everyone who's asked the question says, I know a lot of people who they would like to make a change. They don't feel good about certain things when it comes to their profession. And there's a lot of things that are quite frankly not very fruitful for them either when it comes to this. So it's amazing how many people there could potentially be out there that might say, hey, this site might help me make that transition. So we hope to also have a page that's like about resources for farmers and how they might do it practically and economically to make a transition like that.
Love it. It's fantastic. I know a lot of farmers struggle, and we read a lot, especially in those that raise chickens and that have contracts with Tyson and the other big chicken farm corporations.
Right.
They take out big mortgages. They have to follow all the regulations. And it's a funny thing, because the whole industry is like vertically integrated. Tyson owns just about everything. They own the birds, and they own the way things are done. And they may or may not buy so many chickens back from the people that are raising it. But the people that are raising it, they have the big mortgage. They have the big expense. And sometimes they're just barely making it.
Right. Yeah, it certainly seems to be the case. And you know, you look at the people who take these jobs and farms, farm workers and slaughterhouses, and you realize that they really are, in many cases, the jobs of last resort.
Yep, yep. You know? This is very exciting, because I can imagine those who have had the courage and have made a transition can really be inspirational to others, some food for thought for others. And is it up yet, or you're just building it?
Our content is currently up, and but it's not going to the new site, the way it's going to be presented, is not up yet. We're still working on putting finishing touches on it. We profile in the series is Brenda Vetter, and she's living outside of Madison. It was really great, because when I was doing this story on pheasant hunting in Wisconsin, it turns out I was looking for someone that had rescued pheasants, because I wanted to tell that side of the story. Researching the whole canned hunting story there, I really wanted to get the perspective of someone who actually got to know pheasants as individuals and has them on their sanctuary. So That worked out so beautifully. So yeah, I worked on that Pheasant story and I got it published on Alternet, and we're hoping that some of their affiliate media outlets might be interested in the story. We're really kind of hoping, because it's a pretty astonishing story. When you consider the fact, if you don't mind me transitioning to this.
No, this is the focus of the show. So we want to know more about this whole story. What is the Pheasant story?
It's even something bigger than just about pheasants. But I decided that what caught my eye was a story in the Wisconsin State Journal that said that the state has invested $1.7 million in a pheasant hatchery, the Department of Natural Resources. And I didn't know. I mean, I don't know everything, but I'm pretty tuned into what's going on in animal agriculture. And I have never yet heard of a pheasant hatchery that's a factory that produces thousands of pheasant chicks each day. And I thought, this is just surreal and so disturbing.
So that people can hunt them.
Exactly. So what I found in doing this story and talking to the DNR people that run this hatchery, and what they do is they sell these chicks to the game farms, which are canned hunting farms throughout the state. What I learned from these people and trying to have a sane conversation with them is that there's a narrative there that's very important to winning the public's trust about this. Because the 85% of the public I discovered don't hunt. It's just the 15% in Wisconsin that hunt. But the 85% begrudgingly accept hunting because they buy into this narrative, which is based on fear mongering, that animals will take over the earth, that they will take over their communities, right? But here's what's so ironic about the situation. These are pheasants that are being mass produced. They're considered an invasive species. They take over habitat of the tribe, the indigenous species that the DNR is supposed to be protecting. So here they are introducing thousands of lives into, instead of controlling populations, because, the narrative of hunting is conservation, controlling populations. They're actually countering that by what they do. They're actually bringing all these thousands of birds into this world just to be shot at. I kind of questioned them about this, and what I learned is they don't have a response. Their response is that pheasant hunting and the money that generates as a blood sport, as a recreational activity, 40% of that goes back into wildlife habitat restoration to save other species. Think about that. The logic of that is
it's money. It doesn't make it. There's no logic. It's just the way it's always been.
And our tax dollars, we have that in Illinois too, and our tax dollars are paying for it. So I figured one way to kind of get their attention is maybe to launch a campaign to get people to contact their elected officials and say, we don't want our tax dollars being spent on these awful hatcheries. So that would be one way we could put a dent. So that's kind of one project I've been working on as well.
I'm just so mind-boggled. It's just so nutty, unbelievable. And if they're supposed to be an invasive species, why are we breeding them?
They displace the habitat of other wild birds and animals. And I have to tell you, looking at the videos from some of the hunters, the championships that they have in Wisconsin and Minnesota, they're training these children to be vicious against these birds. I mean, they're so tame because they've been raised in captivity that if you run up to them, that they'll be frozen stiff. They won't even move. What they're doing is to get them to fly, they'll either pick them up and throw them into the air, or they'll kick them into the air, and then they'll just shoot them at a range of 10 to 20 feet and think that that's some kind of sport. It's the most vicious thing it's one of the worst things I've ever seen. I couldn't believe it. So I had to write a story about it.
We live in a society that exploits everything. Yeah. And we exploit nature, we exploit animals, we exploit each other.
Right.
It's human nature. And there is a group, I want to think that it's growing, that is starting to say, no, humans don't want to do this anymore. And I'm really hopeful that we're evolving, perhaps. And this is just one tiny unfortunate thing that's happening in the whole grand scheme of things. So,
right.
Let's connect the dots like you did. How are you, your bigger picture is with guns and hunting, right? Because guns, yeah. Everybody's talking about them now, gun rights.
Yeah.
And because we've had so many unfortunate instances in the schools and in public places with these random killings. Yeah, so let's talk about that.
Yeah, I'd love that. One of the things that I opened with in the Pheasant story was the fact that I heard Jimmy Carter, I don't know how he got into the news cycle, but he suddenly was in the news cycle and he's being interviewed and he doesn't have a book out or anything that I'm aware of. But all of a sudden he's back in, and his message was that the current effort to pass gun laws isn't about hunting or people that use their guns in self-defense. And I had to let that sink in, because what it really kind of said to me was, I wonder if he did this to Burton or not, but he was kind of making a moral equivalence there between killing in self-defense and hunting for killing animals for sport. And I thought, wow, even the most liberal, some of the more liberal voices in our culture are legitimizing killing animals for sport. And so that really got me thinking how we're really not making the connection between different forms of violence in our culture, and how that it's a known fact that many of these mass shooters have a history of harming animals and then moving on to the human victims, right? We know that, and yet we've got liberal politicians and the media who honor hunting, they honor the killing of other species, but they mourn the loss of our own kind. And it's such an incredible disparity to see. So we're chipping away at that. We're trying to change that conversation.
The whole notion of hunting for many people has a romantic feeling to it for them.
Yeah.
It brings up all kinds of stereotypical images of strong men that go out into the natural woods,
yeah,
and bring back the game for the family.
Right.
But you even talked about how there are a lot of women too that are getting into this sport, because, you know, the women want to have equal footing with men. So we're going to sign up and do all the awful things that the men are doing, which is kind of nutty.
It sure is.
We're continually working on society and changing what is acceptable and what is normal.
Yeah.
There's a lot of conversation today about rape, and we have the Me Too movement and all the things that we're not accepting anymore that people used to be very hush-hush about. We're having a lot of loud conversations, and that's good. And it's true, too, with exploiting non-human species.
Yeah, for sure. I hope that, we have so much work to do, I feel, at some points. But then I also see signs that are very positive. Like today I learned about a settlement that Smithfield had to pay to these communities, surrounding communities, a $50 million plus settlement. And that's like a precedent. I guess that it's kind of a precedent, and it really scares the industry, because they've been able to kind of push back on these legal challenges before. And now maybe the fact that they're not so powerful doing that, maybe that's a sign of the times.
What was the settlement for?
The settlement had something to do with communities filed a class action lawsuit against Smithfield for polluting waterways, for mismanaging all the manure that they produce, and creating a public nuisance, as I understand it. But they haven't been very successful, these kinds of lawsuits, in the past. But maybe it's a sign of the times that's changing. Let's hope so.
Absolutely. These companies are not just exploiting non-human animals. They're exploiting human animals as well. The workers are treated very poorly in many instances, from raising the animals to slaughtering the animals and then to packing and shipping. These folks don't make a lot of money and they're not treated well. And then there's the environment. And if they can get away with dumping shit in our waterways, literally,
yeah,
they'll do it. Yeah. And we've just been letting it happen. but not anymore, not with Free From Harm.
That's right.
So when did the article in Alternate come out?
About a week ago.
And what's been the response so far?
Pretty good. They told me that they have a lot of affiliate media outlets too that might take an interest in this, like Bill Moyers and Huffington Post and some other. So maybe it'll get some secondary leverage with some other media outlets, I'm hoping. Because it starts out really talking about gun violence in general, and then how this hatchery thing caught my eye, and I go into the pheasant hunting. But yeah, we'll see. I hope so. Another project I just finished is a manuscript for an anthology, and it's called Meatsplaining.
What is it called?
Well, you've heard of mansplaining.
Yeah.
This is called Meatsplaining.
I like it. Meatsplaining. Oh, how many times have we heard Meatsplaining?
Meatsplaining, yes. So it's several authors, and they asked me for a contribution. I just finished that. It's about 5,500 words, and it's kind of a critique of, there's a new documentary coming out called Cow versus Kale, The Case for Better Meat.
Ooh.
By a woman named Diana Rogers, who has a pasture-raised ranch. She's a rancher. And pasture-raised rancher. In a way, the narrative is very similar to Food Inc. and Joel Salatin and yep. Michael Pollan. Yep. But it could be the next big film about that whole better meat narrative. So I thought it was a good opportunity to deconstruct that and look at the different messages and look at that kind of from a critical light without like targeting her, because I didn't want it to feel like a piece that was just about looking at her, but it's more so that just the whole movement that she embodies in this movie. So that was, you know, this whole idea that we can raise animals sustainably and humanely, it's just something that we're gonna have to confront and challenge more and more. It's just it's really one of the big cultural narratives of our time.
It is very big, and although raising animals humanely, it's not humane, but raising animals where they're allowed to graze, breathe the air, and be around their family and friends until it's time to like slaughter them is gaining popularity. And there's a lot of problems with it. We all acknowledge it's better than factory farming. Hey, factory farming is horrible. So it's like, how many levels of horrible do you have? So it's horrible, but it's not as horrible as factory farming.
Right.
And we have to acknowledge that we can't raise enough animals for meat with the current demand of meat that is increasing in China and India. Maybe it's going down a little bit in the United States, I don't know. But we can't raise animals for meat unless we condense them in factory farms. So if we're going to move to this sustainable type of farming, everybody's still going to have to reduce their meat consumption, which nobody wants to acknowledge. But I've also heard that we've lost a lot of people who were moving towards vegetarianism and veganism because of this humane farming, because people really still want to eat their meat and they're feeling less guilty somehow. So this is big.
Yeah.
It's kind of a way to shove under the rug the reality of what's really going on.
Well, and they have us believing too that the comparison is really between better meat, the so-called better meat, and factory farming.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it, that's really a false dilemma. Because one of the things that came out of this project was that I did a lot of research into veganic agriculture, and I talked to some people that are doing some amazing stuff. One woman named Helen Atho. She's got her own organic vegan farm, but she also has done a lot of research and testing. It's very interesting how she approaches this very methodically. Learned a lot in the process. If the better meat people really wanted to do an apples-to-apples comparison, because their objectives were really about soil sequestration and regenerating the land and mitigating climate gases and all this stuff, if those are their goals, then they're a better comparison. It wouldn't be factory farming. It would be veganic farming, because veganic farming is organic agriculture without the animal inputs, without the blood meal and feather meal and manure, because none of those things are actually necessary when you have green manure. Plant matter that actually you know, according to Helen Atho, creates a much more sustained, like slow, she calls it a slow release, whereas manure is just like a shot of sugar to the bloodstream. Yeah, it's a better system, and it doesn't create all the run-up and pollution and pathogens that end up in romaine lettuce.
A couple of things. When people say that it's beneficial for the land and the soil to have animals on the land and soil, which is their explanation for why it's good to farm these animals, I say, okay, you want to have animals on your farm? Fine. Why do you have to kill them?
Right.
If you want them trampling and walking around, fine. The other interesting thing about veganic agriculture is that in Europe, it started because people didn't have animals on their farms, and they needed to develop a way to grow food without manure.
Yeah.
And they did. And right. There's a handful of people that are using human manure. That's another story.
Yeah, sure is.
What are you going to do with all this poop? You got to compost it.
Exactly. Well, you know, in organic farming is very much, it's all about manure, using animals, because that's how they justify the exploitation of animals, because they say it's based on a necessity argument. But what I learned is that it's false. It really isn't necessary. And look at what it's create. Look at the romaine lettuce outbreak here. There's nothing in the media about the fact that this can only originate from some kind of animal source. It has to come from the manure or something from an animal in order to then contaminate. It has to come from that source. It has to come from animal agriculture.
You get so much press when vegetables are involved.
Yeah.
And like you said, nobody talks about why it happened. It comes from animal manure that was used as fertilizer on these plants, and most of that manure came from factory farms where the animals are mistreated and they live in filth and they encourage all of that disease.
And they're spraying the field with manure. I mean, there's nowhere else to put it, so they're using it as fertilizer because these factory farms have nowhere else to, what are they going to do, store it in lagoons for until it dries out? I mean, they have to find a use for it.
Yeah, think of like whey protein, for example. I mean, there's another example of like, they didn't know what to do with all this whey protein they got from separating it from the milk. So they came up with, let's make protein powder out of it and tell the athletes they really need it.
Designer premium protein, which is really a waste product from the yogurt making industry. Yep.
Oh, please. Robert, save the world for us. Okay. So is there anything else you want to tell me about the pheasant or the Wisconsin tax dollars or anything else on that subject? Can people sign a petition or something?
Yeah, the AltriNet article has a petition at the end of it. It would be great if we could get as many signatures as possible.
Okay, great. I'll include a link to the article on this podcast. Great.
And tomorrow is International Respect for Chickens Day. And so United Poultry Concerns, run by Karen Davis, has asked activists and other people to do some kind of action or something to build awareness about chickens. Tomorrow I'm going to do a Facebook live stream video and talk about some of our rescues. But then on Sunday, we're with Chicago Animal Safe, Free From Harm is going to participate in a rally near a slaughterhouse in Chicago. And we're going to do speakouts and we're going to congregate, and we might actually occupy the space in the slaughterhouse for a while if we can do so, and hopefully get some public and media attention and outreach.
Exciting. Excellent. So what's the name of the day that it is?
International Respect for Chickens.
International Respect for Chickens. Now, is that every May 4th or is it?
To my understanding, it is. And it's something that I believe Karen Davis came up with. So for me, it's about, of course, honoring the chickens, but it's also about partly honoring Karen Davis, because for 30 plus years now, she's been such a tireless advocate. And I've learned so much from her about everything. So it's a nice way to tribute her too.
I love that. And she deserves it. Like you said, she's worked so tirelessly and has done so much amazing stuff. And, you know, the Me Too movement has also hit the animal rights movement, the vegan movement, Me Too.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think Karen has been treated well enough in this world as she deserves, because she's a woman. And I'll just put it there like that.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm just thinking of a specific event that happened at the 2002 Animal Rights Movement farm event.
Uh-huh.
There are stories online about what happened.
I think I know what you might be referring to.
Okay, I've started it, so I'm just going to say it briefly, and then we can just tie this up. Howard Lyman was the MC, and he introduced some actress who was relatively new in the movement as the shape of the movement. And we didn't really respond very well to it. And then he said it again because he didn't get the laugh that he wanted. And then later on in the same ceremony, he introduced another woman actress, blonde, attractive, young, as the shape of the movement. And I remember Karen Davis being there, and I think she might, I don't know if she was part of the ceremony or whatever, but she just didn't get the same introduction because she wasn't young and blonde.
Right.
She had done so much incredible work. It was just very frustrating at that moment and in other moments as well, that we don't give the people who do the great work what they deserve. So I like that May 4th is International Respect for Chickens, and also sending out love to Karen Davis.
Exactly. Yeah. And she's still, you know, she's still going so strong. You know, she's still as strong as ever. I'm going to see her at the Animal Rights Conference in LA at the end of June. So, you know, we'll have a drink at the bar and like we usually do. And kind of, it's a little bit of a reunion. We get to chit chat, and it's nice to see her. It really is.
Okay. Well, Robert, thank you for sharing all of this good stuff. It's so inspiring to hear what you're doing.
Well, thank you for having me. I love being on your show. I love what you're doing. And I follow you on Facebook. That's about the extent of, you know, I listen to your show and I follow you on Facebook. And I love, you know, the range of things and topics that you cover is really wonderful.
Thank you. Well, you know, to stay healthy, I don't just focus on vegan activism.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important, I think, for all of us to nourish ourselves and rejuvenate ourselves, because there is more to life than this, even though this is my life and it's very important, but it can be very frustrating and we have to keep things light and humorous. I don't know if you saw, I was just in Costa Rica celebrating my 60th birthday.
That's terrific.
Yep, a lot of fun birds out there too.
Yeah.
Birds and bats and bugs.
Oh, cool. I love that.
Okay, Robert, thank you for joining me so much on It's All About Food.
Thank you so much, Karen. Have a great one.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's the end of our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Send me an email with comments and questions at info@realmeals.org. And everybody, please have a delicious week.